And now here's Bill Hendry, 1-800-449-8686.
I want to say, not that I'm a classic believer in God, but let me just say the phrase because it says, you know, pretty much how I feel. God bless those guys and those women in Iraq today, especially the British Marines. They're in the middle of some nasty, dirty stuff right now, and Saturday is the word I'm getting. Saturday is when the assault on Baghdad is going to take place. It's difficult to make some people understand. Like my brother-in-law, for instance. My brother-in-law. He lives in London. He sits and has a coffee and chit-chats with his English friends, and they all sit there and look down their noses at this effort as another imperialistic American war. And it's difficult to get people to understand one simple rule. I don't know whether we invented it as Americans. I guess it's always been true down through the ages that while society endeavors to move forward in a peaceful and constructive way, as we have for the most part in America over the years, every now and again, reality intrudes and its face is a little violent. You have to fight for a few things. You kind of have to muscle your way into the trough line. You have to fight for a position, on the gravy train. And you can fight here, or you can look down the road and say maybe it's better that we engage over there. For instance, the war on terror. We could hide behind metal detectors here, or we could go over there and see what we could do about neutralizing them. And along the way, in fighting a war of self-defense, we also uncover other nasty realities. The oppression of a people, the reality of torture and chemical weapons and all of the horror of war and modern despotism. Right now, don't make any mistake about it, the Marines, the United States Army, the British Marines are involved in something much, much dirtier than the Gulf War. This has got nothing to do with the Gulf War. A generation that was weaned on the Gulf War and thought that wars took, you know, a little bit of time between a cup of coffee and a sandwich, and then boom, 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 the guy's out of there and we march in and we have parades. Uh-uh. No, 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 no. What we're going to see on Saturday will be a classic armored battle reminiscent of North Africa in World War II. Now, let me tell you what I got here. And I'm going to read this stuff. And because we have sources nobody's got. Here's what's going to happen. And let me give you the review of what happened today. And then we'll set it up for you for the 29th. 3 days of violent sandstorms and low clouds are forecast for southern and central Iraq for today, as you know. For the Iraqis, this means a couple of days of respite. For the Americans and British, a scramble to shroud the tanks and equipment in canvas and tarp sheeting to protect them from the creeping grains of sand that is blowing around. Not only are the tanks out of action until the end of the week, but grounded too are the heavy bombers, the fighter bombers, and the helicopters, which fought their first skirmishes with the Special Republican Guard's Al-Madina Division, spelled M-A-D-I-N-A, not M-E-D-I-N-A, which we has the American press wanted to Hispanic it up somehow. That was near Al-Kut on the road to Baghdad. They lost that Apache. You recall that news, the two pilots captured. That was during that battle with that Al-Madina division. We lost an Apache. The two pilots are now POWs. In the mountains of Kurdistan in the north, snow blizzards instead of sandstorms will hamper the movements of British and American special forces for the next couple of days. Since Monday, these forces have been coming down in five northern Iraqi airfields. Barmani, Harir, Bakarjo, and Anqua, and also H3 in the west, which was that airfield we told you that was captured last week, forming up for the assault to secure the oil fields of Mosul and Kirkuk. Their next mission will be to head south for the offensive against Hussein's tribal home of Tikrit, north of Baghdad. Now, these are all special forces working up north in conjunction with the Kurds. The Iraqis, accustomed to these extremes of climate, will use the breather for reorganization, resupplying the units with fresh stores of ammunition, fuel and provisions, and urgent repairs of combat vehicles. They'll also use the time to carry out snipe at and harry American convoys, stray vehicles, and small campsites. There's been a discussion of supply, and they call the supply line, kind of the body of the snake, at the very top are the teeth, at the bottom is the tail. The further you are away from the tail, the more dangerous it is to resupply your units. And right now, we got one hell of a long supply line. It is exposed, possibly. I'm not saying that it is, but there's a possibility that it's exposed, and that makes it vulnerable to harassing units, squads, snipers, perhaps if there's any Iraqi air at all, any plane in the area. It makes it vulnerable to the latest ploy that the Iraqis are using, which is now they're in civilian clothing. So they've pretty much thrown away any decent convention of warfare. It's gone. Everybody loves to talk about the United States and the atomic bomb in World War II. Let me explain it one more time, if I could. The atomic bomb was dropped in a declared war between uniformed combatants at a time when the aerial bombardment of civilian population centers was commonplace. It was not the optimum tactic, but it was used at times. Because there were times you had to get to something, whether it was an arms depot or anything else, and they didn't have smart bombs in those days. The firebombing at Dresden that everybody likes to talk about, let me explain that one. The firebombing at Dresden in Germany was against German troops that had come into the rail station there. It wasn't intended to murder civilians. Now, you can talk about international law all you want, but all we do is we wind up, discussing it like children. When I hear people say, well, because we're not following the UN convention, that they didn't follow that UN convention, and why should we follow that UN convention? Because they're not following the other one. I mean, I would rather not have that discussion with anybody, okay? I'd rather talk to adults. And then there's the other one. Well, why wouldn't the Iraqis not go according to Geneva Convention? We violated it. Yeah, where? Where? And don't bring up Guantanamo, baby, because that ain't going to work. That doesn't wash. And even if we have, would you like to throw the whole thing out now? The Iraqis have put on civilian clothing. They're mixing in with civilians. They had a tank sitting in a hospital. They had chemical suits sitting in a hospital in Basra. They actually got into American uniforms and cut down surrendering Iraqi troops. This is something that the Germans tried in World War II. They put on American uniforms. They also had German soldiers that had perfect American accents. And they sowed a little confusion behind the lines for a couple of weeks. So the Iraqis are trying that. They're trying anything. And why wouldn't they? It's a dying regime, and a cornered rat doesn't go down easy. This thing is going to go down snarling and biting and clawing to the bitter end. This is how disgusting and vile this enemy is. Civilians. They don't care. Commit homicide under a white flag of surrender. They don't care. Take off the uniform and put on civilian clothing. They've become a band of guerrillas. Okay. Well, what that means is we will have to be a little bit more heartless in the way we deal with any combatant that we see. And then, of course, the propaganda pictures will come out showing Americans killing civilians, actually armed combatants, and all of our friends in the September 10th anti-war movement will be able to put those pictures up on placards and parade down Market Street again saying, see, we kill civilians. And the propaganda war will go on, that aspect of it believed by any idiot in the vicinity. And, you know, these days we got a few of them. So just remember, I told you, you heard it here first, okay? When you start seeing the pictures of dead civilians, you heard it here first. Ain't civilians. All right, now, our military sources report that the Iraqi high command has diagnosed the weak point of the U.S. columns driving to Baghdad as being their long supply lines, often trailing several hundred kilometers behind and easily vulnerable to guerrilla attack. Very important. The Iraqis have been using small fighting squads, often in civilian dress, armed with hand grenades, mines, and RPGs, which is a rocket-propelled grenade, to blow up bridges and vehicles. This was a tactic employed at Nasiriyah and is being employed here in Basra. By the way, we've bypassed Nasiriya. We've gotten across the Euphrates River. And we stand poised now to go against the, I'll tell you which division it is in a moment, but one of the armored divisions of the Republican Guard. Based on the first 4 days of combat, War Commander General Tommy Franks has reached a number of conclusions and effected some revisions in his plan of operation. Number one, contrary to expectation, there are no signs of cracks in the Iraqi High Command. Don't worry about it. There's no cracks in the Iraqi High Command. This is a coordinated attack. It's not, they don't have a very well-equipped or substantial army, but nonetheless, it's coordinated. From the chief of staff down to division, brigade, and battalion officer level, Franks had one last stab at undermining the Iraqi command yesterday. At a news briefing, he called without prior notice. He said the Iraqi command is no longer robust, hoping that that would degrade morale. Number two, in view of this and other emerging facts, the coalition is short of ground strength for the assault on Baghdad. That's why Tony Blair and Bush are meeting this week. They need reinforcements. Frank's officers at Doha are saying that the Iraqi capital cannot be taken by two U.S. armies. While there is no intention of postponing the assault on Baghdad, putting in a request to the White House for reinforcements is under consideration. The 4th Armored Division passed through the Suez Canal Monday on its way to the Gulf. And number three, all these forces, as well as Iraq's elite divisions, are making ready to fight the main battle for Baghdad. According to our military sources, that campaign is most likely to get started Saturday, March 29th. Only then will the two sides bring out their biggest guns and apply firepower to a degree never seen since World War II. It's going to be a classic desert tank battle. And one that will win, but one that's going to take a toll, and one that's going to be very bloody, and one that is going to be... It's going to hopefully introduce a generation of Americans to being on the home front during a war that sometimes isn't just, you know, a lot of fun watching CNN. What is the alternative? The alternative was to never go over there, to allow that regime to continue to circumvent international law, acquire dangerous weapons, train, fund, and encourage terrorists, and we could just hunker behind our metal detectors. My pick was to go over there and kick some ass. Some people think that that's the wrong decision. I respect that opinion. My brother-in-law is one of them. What an idiot. I mean, he's a really smart guy. All right, 1-800-449-8686. There's more, and I'll give it to you, but I have to give you a break here. But we have other information from today, and we'll give it to you along with... a few other things we've been digging around. 1-800-449-8686. This is the Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry. 1-800-449-8686.
And now more on The Phil Hendry Show.
Right, we have a few minutes. Now, coming up after the bottom of the hour, I have a scoop, a Phil Hendry Show scoop. It has to do with so-called collateral damage in Iraq. I have a major scoop, and I want you to stick around for that. And the reason why I say, you hear a lot of people say, I got a scoop, stick around for it. Why aren't you afraid somebody else is going to put it on the air before you do? No, I'm not. Believe me, I'm not. Nobody's got this. Nobody's got this. And I love this. Wait till you hear it. You ain't going to believe it. Our number is 1-800-449-8. I can't even remember our phone number anymore, man. It's like the REM sleep. Because we've been here, we've been doing 6 hours, and I'm not complaining. I like it, but I'm beating my staff to death. I could be on the air 12 hours talking about this stuff easily. But we have been on the air 6 hours a night since last Wednesday, and we will be on the air this evening live for the duration. We are going to be live on the West Coast and East Coast until further notice, up until maybe possibly tonight 1 a.m. We might go off the air a little sooner in terms of our live broadcast. We will refeed some earlier broadcast after that, but don't worry about it right now. Portland firefighters ordered to remove flags. Portland Fire Bureau officials Monday ordered U.S. flags removed from downtown fire engines, concerned that their presence might provoke dangerous confrontations with anti-war demonstrators. Whoever gave that order is a coward. Who's this guy? What is he? He's the deputy chief, Gary Warrington. I live in the United States of America. I don't know where they live in Oregon. I don't know what that is. Isn't that America? Last time I checked. And when you got a fire engine that's paid for by the taxpayers of the United States of America, state of Oregon, Portland, or whatever little log-burning cabin they got up there, they get to put an American flag on a fire engine. And if it provokes anti-war demonstrators, they can pound it up their ass. What do you think about that? What kind of an anti-war demonstrator would an American flag provoke? You got a problem with the American flag? I mean, you may be against the war, you may be in favor of the war. Where do you live, stupid? Where do you live? It's a flag. It's the American flag. It's on a fire engine. Fire engines are, last I checked, government-owned. You better get those flags on those fire engines soon, okay? Nah, I'm not going to start any big public campaign. Frankly, I don't care. If you want to be a disgrace, be a disgrace. I know, you're protecting the public safety and all that other baloney and hot air. Yeah, go right ahead, Chief. Do whatever you got to do. Don't provoke those anti-war protesters. I hear they're really fearsome up in Portland. Yeah, they're a badass bunch. So I'm a firefighter. I work for the city of Portland. I can't put a flag on my fire engine, even though it's the flag of the United States of America, which is the government under which I work, and I'm driving a government-owned vehicle, even though it is in Oregon, and I realize we got all that states' rights bullcrap. Why don't you guys just join the South? I know, good thing for the Oregonians, man. Head on down to the Confederacy. I think they would have loved your ass down there. They don't like that American flag either. You're kidding me, aren't you? Is this a joke? Taking the flag down hits a lot of nerves, said one of the firefighters. There's a lot of pride that goes with being a firefighter. Well, no kidding. Like many civilians, members of Portland's fire company spontaneously began flying the flag from rearview mirrors and other parts of their trucks. But because of the anti-war protesters getting their feelings hurt, they were told to take the flags down, said one of them. Thursday, fire crews were on hand for a downtown sit-in that featured several flag burnings. Warrington said he decided to issue the new policy Monday after talking to some of the crews working that night. My position is not we should bow to those people, we should be worried about them, we should let them win. That is not it at all. I absolutely want to stand up and support the flag. All I was trying to do was keep our members from being put in harm's way. Any peace activists that are attacking firefighters aren't peace activists at all. They're just the usual run-of-the-mill anti-war people. They're on spring break. They're having themselves a few beers. They just want to go out in the street and have a party, man. They got no philosophy concerning war or the danger of war. They're like a lot of anti-war protesters or people in the so-called anti-war movement. They have no real foundation in philosophy. They're just knee-jerk. You gonna let those people run your life? You gonna let idiots like that run your life? And these guys don't even have. They can't even argue their way to. They can't argue their position, let alone anything else. There are many people who oppose this war who are classic patriots, who revere the flag as a symbol of freedom and democracy, said Will Seaman of the Portland Peaceful Response Coalition. Okay. 1-800-449-8686. Boy, that's great. You're listening to the Phil Hendry Show. Stand by. We got our scoop here. I just got it in. On so-called collateral damage in Iraq. This is the Phil Hendry Show, 1-800-449-8686.
Phil Hendry Show, 1-800-449-8686.
One
1-800-449-8686. The Phil Hendry Show is back.
Wait a minute, I got to handle something. I opened my big mouth. Buddy, how you doing?
Hey, what's going on?
You misunderstood me, man. I didn't mean to say... Well, go ahead. Tell me what you're upset with.
You're talking about this flag situation, American flag on Portland, Oregon. You was talking about how bad they were. And says, well, just send it to the South, the Confederacy.
I know. I didn't.
Anyway.
What I meant to say was, back during the Civil War, they should have joined the Confederacy.
That's history. This is
all
present,
I'm saying
right?
All I'm saying is they don't want to fly the flag.
Who don't?
The freaking idiots in Portland don't.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, I can understand that. Yeah, that's not right.
Well, I mean, I'm just saying, look, you know, see, here it is. There's firefighters. These are men who work for a government agency who want to fly the American flag from their trucks, and they don't want to piss off the anti-war protesters, so they're saying, please don't fly your flag. You fly your flags from your trucks. And I made a very impertinent and, thoughtless remark. I apologize.
Yeah, well, I mean, it just hit me wrong. I'm driving a truck, you know, trying to keep America rolling during this war, and I listen to talk show, that's all I ever listen to, and I hear this statement.
Well, I know.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, I fly a flag in my front yard. You know, I served in the military.
That's
okay. So I guess the South can't be bad, huh?
I don't really like it that much, but no, that's okay. That's...
Yeah, I mean, I just wanted to see what that was all about, you know, and in my opinion, you know, the protesters... There's plenty of planes going every day to Iraq, right?
Well, no, they can stay here. I think they should stay here. They're Americans.
Why?
They're just dumb Americans, that's all. And
well,
it's up to us to re-educate them.
Yeah, we're putting it
they still got
dumb Americans.
Do they still have that Waffle House down there?
Oh, they got tons of them, man.
Yeah. Do the waitresses still have no teeth? I mean, does the coffee still?
No, coffee's brought in up north.
Okay, buddy, thank you.
All right, man.
See you later, man. Waffle House. Nothing like it at 2 a.m., baby. Go on in there, get yourself a stack of thick waffles with the big things of sausage, and the waitresses are all there with the three teeth, and it's smoking those Pall Malls going, what you want, sugar? It is a fantastic thing. Now, here it is, and then we'll go on to some other news. I want to talk to you about the uprising in Basra. Everybody's all agog about the uprising in Basra. Let me explain to you about the uprising in Basra, if I might, in a few minutes. It's a good thing, don't get me wrong, and God bless those British Marines that are in there. But let me explain, let me give you some background on what it could mean. Now, you remember... the Syrian bus that was fired on accidentally by an F-15 causing civilian deaths, it was collateral damage, so said the United States military. According to our sources, the only truth about any of this stuff was that it was a Syrian bus. The missile was no stray. It was deliberately fired from an F-15 fighter bomber at a bus carrying armed Palestinian volunteers to join up with Iraqi forces in order to make sure that this was the last such Palestinian group of volunteers for Iraq. That F-15 made a piece of history. It carried out the first American air attack on a combatant Palestinian group. And more will be heard about this episode. And by the way, my hat's off to that fighter pilot. Good job. And good job to the intelligence people, and good job to everyone that planned that. A busload of Palestinians coming into the country from Syria, we need to discourage that real fast. And they did. Blew it up. Bye-bye. Adios, you're a ghost. Outside Basra, residents of the southern port city of Basra, surrounded for 3 days by British forces, rose against pro-Saddam loyalists on Tuesday. The most senior British commander in the region has said, with British tanks and Royal Marines poised to enter the city, and I believe they are now in the city, they told reporters that the nature of this uprising inside the predominantly Shiite Muslim city of 1.3 million people was unclear, but that this could be the beginning of something very important. British and American commanders had expressed hope that Shiites in the south, resentful of long years of repressive rule by Saddam Hussein's minority Sunni Muslim regime, would seize the opportunity presented by the coalition invasion and rise against the regime's forces. Now, The U.S. forces have bypassed Basra, and they have bypassed al-Nasiriyah, and you probably have heard this term bypass so much. You haven't heard it probably said in such great frequency since, I don't know, since you were on a treadmill, you know, like, you might need a quadruple bypass. If you don't stop eating at Waffle House, you'll need a bypass. Things like that. Bypass is when the tanks bypass. They go around a city and they head on up to the big trophy. In this instance, it's Baghdad. Baghdad is the bowling trophy. It's gold, and that's what we want. We get Baghdad, the whole shooting match, it's over. Now, so what do you want to fool around taking al-Basra, or you want to fool around taking al-Nasiriyah? It's not fooling around. You want to get these population centers under control, but American forces will bypass these, and the Royal Marines go in and try to calm the situation within the city and to make sure that the city is fully under coalition control, and then they get the services up and running, which right now apparently only 40% of the water is getting to the residents of Basra. Now here's why it's a little tiny, itsy-bitsy, teeny-weeny disturbing. These are Shiite Muslims. Traditionally, these are not exactly our pals. Shiite Muslims, that's what they got in Iran. Those are the guys that took our people hostage. So those are the guys that for 20-plus years have been extremely hostile toward the United States. I'm not saying anything about the Iraqi Shiites. They may be a whole different breed, although, according to some sources, this uprising in Basra has had the support of Iran. And I don't know what that represents. Either they've had some commandos in there, or they've had some Iranian military personnel in there, or advisors, or whatever. It has had the support of Iran. You know, I don't know what will happen in the days ahead. I simply know that it's another delicate political situation that we will have to handle. And I've never quite understood Tony Blair's comment, and President Bush's comment for that matter, that the territorial integrity of Iraq was going to be respected. I never got that. I don't know, what does that mean exactly? Territorial integrity of Iraq is going to be respected. Why? It's an artificially created state. You have a Shiite population that would probably like to break away in the south. You have a Kurdish population that would probably like to break away in the north. You have Arabs in the middle. You know, I mean, why? Well, probably because it's much, much easier in the short term to administer over one unit than it is to coordinate between three. But eventually, that is going to be the problem in Iraq. Don't even worry about it. And the Shiites, for all the support that the British are giving them right now and the Americans are giving them right now in their revolt in Basra, please don't be fooled into thinking that these guys are just real sweethearts, because they got a couple of axes to grind with us. And that's fine. That's okay. You know, the enemy of my enemy is my friend. Ain't that it? Something like that. British forces surrounded Basra on Saturday but chose not to enter the city right away, concerned that street-to-street battles with remaining Iraqi militia and Saddam Fedayeen paramilitary units would cause horrible civilian casualties. However, we now know that the Saddam Fedayeen and Republican Guard units are donning civilian clothes. They're intermingling. What did you just give me, Janice? We had another piece of information about a hospital in Nasiriyah. Oh, we found Iraqi soldiers in a hospital in Nasiriyah, hiding as patients. And because we've been a little bit more careful since those Marines, I should say, were murdered by so-called surrendering Iraqis, we're not taking any chances, and we sort of nosed these guys out of their rat hole. I'll find it. Don't worry, Janice. It's just another one of those things that I... Here it is. U.S. Marines on Tuesday seized a handful... U.S. Marines Tuesday seized a hospital in Nasiriyah and captured nearly 170 Iraqi soldiers who'd been staging military operations from the facility. Ain't that something? And the problem our guys have is this. They're not going to get a break from anybody who's against this war. They're not going to get a break. They're not going to get one break if they kill even so much as one civilian in trying to protect themselves and in trying to carry out a military operation. The people against this war will be all over them like dogs on red meat, because they got nothing. They need to have dead civilians. They need to have dead soldiers. They need to have dead children. Otherwise, they got nothing. They got no argument against this war. Nothing. And so I'm feeling so sorry for those guys, but I say, wherever you feel you're at risk, fire away, baby. Let the chips fall where they may. All right, so that's that. Now, why is Basra important? Why does it matter? We're going to talk about that in a moment, and we're also going to talk about some thoughts that I've been having now that one of the ports is open. The British have opened up a port at Qusair, and some thoughts that I'm having about the American people and the Iraqi people hooking up. Feedback from you on it as well. This is the Phil Henry Show, and we are usually doing a much, much different show than this one. However, events warrant it.
We're 1-800-449-8686. The Phil Henry Show is back.
Looking at a website that is posts the daily diary of an Iraqi citizen living in Baghdad. I mentioned yesterday, he said that the American strikes in Baghdad have been very precise, but that they have collaterally damaged houses in that they've blown out windows and they've blown out doors. We have made quite an effort at trying to conduct a humane operation in Iraq, but maybe there's no such thing, especially when you're fighting a determinedly inhumane enemy. And the thing that's really amazing to me is why people continue to rally against this war. What exactly are they, what is their point now? Let's pull out and allow Saddam to continue his rule of that country and continue his support of terrorism and his murder of those people. But wait a second, Phil, it's none of our business. We shouldn't be there. Okay, but you care about the Iraqi people being killed in the war. Well, yeah, of course. But if we weren't having a war there, you wouldn't care about them getting killed by Saddam. Well, yes, I would, but what am I going to do about it? Oh, I see. There's plenty you can do about it on this level. Keep us out of there from helping to maybe relieve some of the pain. But if we weren't there at all, you're just going to sit back with your thumb parked and have another baby, Ruth. Is that it?
Well, sure. It's none of my business.
That's what I say. You cats don't make any sense. All right. Well, I was talking about why Basra matters. Let me get back to this. The population of Basra consists largely of Shia Arab Muslims, most of whom have little affection for Saddam and his Sunni Arab ruling elite. The city still bears the scars of the brutal suppression by Saddam Hussein's special forces of Shia rebellion at the end of the Gulf War. Thousands were killed, tortured, or imprisoned. Many others fled to Iran. One objective for the coalition troops is to ensure that the fractious Shia South does not erupt into civil war. A large number of fighters from the military wing of the main Shia opposition party are based in Iran, and there are fears that they may cross the border and initiate a scramble for power. U.S. military officials had spoken of a rapid and benign occupation of the Basra area and hopes that troops would be welcomed in the streets. They believe this would create a positive image of U.S. and U.K. goals and undermine resistance in other parts of the country. According to reports, military commanders have drawn up extensive plans for humanitarian operations once the key areas in the south are secured. With its close proximity to Iraq's borders with Kuwait and Iran and access to the Gulf, Basra has long been a key entrance point to the country. As such, it has long borne the brunt of war. It sounded almost as if I was going to launch into a tourist thing. With its close proximity to Iraq's borders with Kuwait and Iran and access to the Gulf, water skiing in Basra is just... All right, so here's what my idea was. The port town of Qusair is supposedly now declared open by the United Kingdom, by the British Marines. They say the key southern Iraqi port of Qusair, where UK and United States forces have been meeting Iraqi resistance, is now safe and open. That according to the BBC. This has been no serious... There have been no serious outbreaks of shooting in the past day in Umkasar, according to British sources. The first aid ship could arrive at the port within 48 hours. So that means we now have a port. We can now offload humanitarian supplies. And I got on the phone today with David G. Hall, who is our master programmer here. And I said, I'd like to do something on the show. I'd like to, can we get the listeners to begin a American people to the Iraqi people supply of food? And he said, actually, it's too much money to ship the food from the States over there. I said, then what can we do? He said, probably donations of money to the American Red Cross or the International Red Cross. And I said, that's fine with only one problem. We got burned after 9/11 with all that money going into the Red Cross, and we come to find out that much of it didn't get to the families. It got into that emergency fund of the Red Cross. I said, I'd really hate to repeat that. But what I do want to do on some level is start a fund of money to help purchase some of the food and clothing and medical supplies that would be needed by the Iraqi people. But I'm not going to solicit for it now. I got to figure out how to do this. I want to make sure that actually gets to where it's supposed to go. I don't want anybody slicing 10% off the top. It may not be anything possible to do. You know, I mean, I realize there are professional charities which take a piece of the action before they send it on its merry way. And then we have the Red Cross. They do great work. I'm not criticizing them, but I would have to have complete assurances that this money isn't going into their reserve fund. It's going right straight to where it's supposed to be. And then we have, you know, there's other groups, I'm sure. Point is, it would go a long way, in my opinion, toward solidifying some relationship, some real relationship between the American people and the Iraqi people, as opposed to this just being another television war. That there's real people behind the American flag or the face of the imperialist or however they see us, and that we ain't so bad. And that if we could somehow maybe raise some money. But again, it's a little dicey, and things are still a little bit unresolved over there. And I don't want to be raising money just to see like half of it not get there. However, it's a thought that I'm going to keep in my mind, and if anybody has any suggestions, that would be really cool. Email them to us, though, okay? Don't call us with them. Email them to us, phs@philhenryshow.com. Just doing our little bit here. 1-800-449-8686. Two-thirds of food supplies come into the Umkasar port, according to CNN. This is the Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry, 1-800-449-8686.
Phil Hendry Show. We're in the midst of Iraq war coverage, and we will continue in this format for as long as it's necessary. Those of you who know our show down through the years, we're essentially a comedy show, but we have, by our own choice, decided to stay on the air and give you another look at how we do our show, but also, more importantly, give you as much information as we can about the ongoing operation, military operation in Iraq. Now, I have news of a major battle that's waging right now. We'll tell you that. The largest battle of the ground war in Iraq has broken out just south of Baghdad. Up to 300 Iraqi troops have died in fierce fighting around the cities of Najaf and Karbala. I can't find Karbala on this map. I can sure find Najaf. It is on the way. It is on the way to Baghdad across the Euphrates River. Karbala looks like it is just a province.
Karbala.
or it's actually they're two cities close to each other on the road to Baghdad. The battle began when Iraqi troops launched a huge nighttime attack on the U.S. 7th Cavalry, possibly trying to take advantage of poor visibility, which is exactly what I said they would do. Didn't I? I told you that yesterday. Apparently it's not going too good for the Iraqis. The main battle will possibly take place Saturday. That will be an enormous armored encounter between the United States Armored Forces, 3rd Infantry, Marine Armor, and a division called the Hammurabi Division of the Republican Guard, which is a which is an armored division. POWs. We've seen them on television. As Americans, we've seen them for years. I'm old enough to remember the pictures of POWs in Vietnam. They were blindfolded. They were paraded in front of television cameras. In 1979, when the American embassy was taken to Tehran, once again, we saw blindfolded Americans who were led out of the building and walked around. There's something about seeing a man or a woman blindfolded with their hands tied behind their backs being led around. It's not fair, you know? It's just not fair. Point being that, I don't know about the rest of the world, Americans don't respond too positively to pictures of POWs being put on television. They remind us a lot of Vietnam. It's happening now in Iraq. And these are images that sear into the national consciousness. American fighter pilots, blindfolded and bound, paraded before jeering crowds in the enemy country that captured them. U.S. And allied prisoners of war were taken and paraded through the streets of Berlin in World War II. And the citizens were allowed to throw things or to beat on them as they passed. And a lot of the guys, some of whom were able to survive combat, never survived that. It just, that was it. It was such a traumatic experience. It's just about the lowest a country can sink. However, if you're going up against the great Satan America, maybe that's considered to be a great trophy. Americans are seeing scenes of American soldiers taken prisoner in this war against Iraq. According to Gerald Post, who is the director of the political psychology program at George Washington University, it is designed to underpin Saddam Hussein's claim that Iraq will be the Americans' defeat. You can win in the Arab world, even in losing, by having the courage to defy the superior adversary. So if your adversary is bigger, taller, stronger, and eventually does kick your ass, if you show courage in your defeat, you have won. However, here in the United States, images of POWs, it don't go down too good. I don't know whether or not he wants to influence American thinking, perhaps not, but if he is, he's going about it the wrong way. Because even people, and maybe I shouldn't speak too soon, but even people that are against this war do not like to see American flyers or pilots or soldiers as POWs paraded around in that manner. It angers them. It causes them to support a president they may not otherwise support. It may even cause them to support a conflict they may not otherwise support. Nobody in this country enjoys seeing American prisoners of war blindfolded and paraded in front of a camera. Nobody in this country enjoys seeing dead Marines laying on a garage floor, having their bodies kicked at, their pants pulled down, close-ups of their wounds, and otherwise seeing their remains desecrated. Nobody in this country enjoys seeing a frightened female POW with a leg bandaged looking around at her captors, wondering what's coming next for her. This is not something you show Americans if you want them to understand how bad this war supposedly is. All it does is piss us off. Now, there are actual quotes of Marines on the ground right now who have seen those images, and they're pissed. Not that being pissed necessarily makes you a better soldier, but these guys are now looking for payback. They have stated, and of course they have to obey their officers' commands, but they have stated they're not going to be so reluctant now to fire on an Iraqi civilian. They're not going to be so trusting of a surrendering Iraqi. This is what I'm talking about. This is what I'm talking about. This is the reality of war. And so as it gets nastier and dirtier, and as perhaps civilians are killed, or perhaps guys dressed as civilians are killed, these are the images that will be seized by the desperate people who are against this war because they just haven't had any real nasty stuff to sink their teeth into, and they will use it as propaganda proof that the people of Iraq are suffering. That's something that also pisses me off, because I can see right through that. You know, this propaganda thing goes both ways. What's bullcrap on one side, man, you can translate it over, and it's the same bullcrap on the other side, only a slightly different color. It's like maybe a light green over here, and it's become kind of a bile brown over there. But it smells the same. You know, what's the propaganda of what's perhaps the pictures of Marines defending themselves becomes the pictures of Marines shooting innocent civilians, and now we have ourselves a war crime. Nobody's going to buy that, I don't think. That's the latest. And one other thing about the Shiite Muslims, as U.S. troops take control of Iraq, one of the great unknowns is the reception they'll get from the country's Shiite Muslims. Now, this is something that I was talking about last half hour. If liberated from repression and assured that their interests will be served by a new government, the Shiite Muslims will probably wish to remain citizens of a unified Iraq. If they aren't liberated and reassured, they could seek autonomy or even independence, leading to the breakup of Iraq. That's why I was saying, you know, this is fine what's going on in Basra, but you got to understand something. The Shiite Muslims, they are a cantankerous bunch of people. They have not always been our friends, and they got no stake in being Iraqis any more than the Kurds do. If they aren't liberated and reassured, they could seek autonomy, leading to the breakup of Iraq, or they could align themselves with their co-religionists in Iran, where Shiite Islam is the official religion. That outcome could cause deep anxiety in Saudi Arabia, which has a restive Shiite minority in its eastern province, where the oil fields are. So keep an eye on that Basra thing, because it ain't all as it appears. It's good that the people in that city have apparently attempted to toss out the Republican Guard, the Saddam Fedayeen. They've gotten one of the Ba'ath Party officials. They've captured him. And that's good in the short haul. In the long haul, it may make things a little dicey there in Iraq in terms of rebuilding that country. Our number is 1-800-449-8686. You're listening to our war coverage here on the Phil Hendry Show. We'll give you more of what happened today, and we're also going to tell you a little bit about what's going on in this country as a result of the fighting in the Middle East. 1-800-449-8686, The Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry, 1-800-449-8686.
The Phil Hendry Show is back. 1-800-449-8686.
Anyway, they got this. Have you heard about this dolphin thing? They've got dolphins. They're training them, and PETA's got a problem. So what? They're training dolphins. Apparently, they. Dolphins would have cameras on them, or they would be able to... I don't know what the hell they're doing. Who cares what they're doing? They're doing something. I'm not looking into it right now, but it is something that they are trained to do because they're an intelligent animal and they can do it. PETA all of a sudden is getting involved in this. This is the luxury that this generation of Americans, like no generation before, has. This is what I'm talking about when I talk about the effete expatriate Americans sitting in the cafe in London or Paris, like my brother-in-law, criticizing America's moves in the Middle East. This is what I'm talking about when I'm talking about these sort of American Express, Starbucks, New Age yuppies who are members of PETA, who don't want the dolphins hurt. We're in the middle of a war, for crying out loud. What do you think's more important, the lives of human beings or the lives of a dolphin? The life of a dolphin? Or the nine lives of a dolphin? Frankly, I'd like to see him train cats to do that. I think that'd be fantastic. You imagine if you could, because cats are very, nobody ever notices a cat. They just walk around. Thing walks up, dude, blows itself up. It'd be great. Little suicide vest on a cat. Cats are smart. You can train them. They just, you know, you gotta know how to work their minds. But no one ever notices a cat. He just walks over like he's licking himself, and then suddenly, kabloom! This is America. We still think that everything is, you know, we're going to take a trip to Disneyland this weekend. We still think that it's just another trip to the workout place. We're gonna go look at new Mercedes this weekend. We're gonna go skiing. It's just business as usual. And this war is something from afar that we can critique or not, that we can sit in our living rooms and criticize or not. It becomes an interesting inspiration for a screenplay, maybe, or a point of departure for someone philosophically, where they could say, you know, I'm against war. You know, most of the people that say they're against war are really embarrassed that they're not able to fight the way these guys do. I'm serious. Because if for them, supporting this war means, why aren't I in it? See? But if you're against it, then you can sit there and jawjack about how you're against it. What they're really saying is, it's something that looks really scary and something they may not have the courage for. But instead, this generation of Americans is now engaging in one of the most wasteful discussions that the planet has ever known. Should we use dolphins or not in the conduct of warfare or military operations? Here's PETA's statement. Our troops deserve the best defense possible. But PETA opposes the use of dolphins, sea lions, or any other marine mammals. The project is cruel and cannot provide a reliable defense. How do you know? You don't know. Reliable defense, Jesus, or surveillance for our troops. The Navy claims they are not putting these animals in harm's way, but they've removed these animals from their homes. Oh, isn't that too bad? Relocated them to foreign waters. Ain't that too bad? And are forcing them to not only inspect the waters, but to actually swim up the potential terrace under the water, clamp a cuff on their leg, and deploy a floating marker. So what? It's a freaking animal. It's an animal. The day is going to come when people will die. People will die as the result of some misguided fever dream of protecting animals. And it's going to be okay. Somehow the rationalization will be there. The bottom line is that dolphins cannot provide a reliable defense. You don't know that, PETA. These are living beings with minds of their own. Holy Jesus. Did I actually read that? And though they are incredibly intelligent, they have no idea that lives will be lost if they fail to perform tasks properly. Yet the military wants to rely... Yes, they will. Yes, they will. See, PETA, you don't respect dolphins like I do. They have minds, and they are aware of the lives that are at stake. I've also spoken to dolphins who feel that this is a worthy thing for dolphins to be involved in, and how dare you tell them that they can't? I think we ought to let the dolphins make up their own minds, don't you, PETA? You dumbasses. Ask the dolphins. I think they'll go our way on this thing. I think that they love their country, or at least they love the water around their country. And by the way, I saw Flipper. He was smart. Here is Keith on the Phil Henry Show. Keith?
Hello, Phil.
Yes, sir. Hi.
We've supported the defective gene pool far too long in this country with transfer payments. My comment is about the war, but
I don't understand. I don't understand that. I don't understand that.
Well, it started 30 or 40 years ago, liberalism, or maybe more, and part of it, you know, has to do with the liberal mentality that Lyndon Johnson created in transfer payments.
What are you talking about? What are you
really
talking about?
Need help.
What are you talking about? What are you talking about?
The long term, after this war is over, we're going to have to...
What's a transfer? Hold on for a minute.
Liberalism.
Hold on for a minute. What's a transfer payment?
Welfare, aid to families with dependent children, supplemental security income.
Unemployment insurance,
everything.
GI Bill.
There's 20-something different programs.
GI Bill.
Well, not necessarily those. Now, some of those programs actually are good.
Oh, really? Well, the liberals invented them.
Exactly. The point is simple. We're going to win the war. You know, hopefully we won't get poisoned, our troops. But just as importantly, in the long run, we're going to have the war of liberalism to fight. At some point, we're going to have to tie down the borders. We're going to have to lock the borders down. And we're going to, you know, the rest of the world, we're really naive in this country. The rest of the world is encroaching upon us, and we don't even realize it.
Keith, let me explain something to you. You're talking to a liberal.
Okay, well,
number one.
You know,
number two, allow me. Number two, I support our war in Iraq. I support keeping tight borders. I'll tell you what we're going to have to fight after the war. We're going to have to fight this silly liberal versus conservative discourse that's been going on in this country for 12, 13 years, and it's over. It's over. It isn't the liberals' fault. It isn't the conservatives' fault. The fault is either we have Americans who want to push toward the future, or we have Americans that want to hang on to the past like it's their mother's skirt. And both conservatives and liberals can be part of either group.
Point well taken.
All right.
At any rate, we're going to have to unite. You're exactly right. Because the rest of the world will be more than happy to take what we have. And what will we have after that? I don't know. This is not the end of it, is the point. The war here, there will be other Arab states or other liberal, or whatever you want to call it, liberal other countries that would be more than happy to take what we have. Look at who our true friends were. Look at Mexico. Look at Russia. Look at the different countries that turned their back on us in this thing. You know, and they wanted, what did they want? They wanted a handout for their support.
Well, here's the thing. In the future, the United States will continue to be a target. And what's going to undermine our country are these self-hating Americans who just don't get the fact that we've entered a new millennium, we've entered a new century, we are at war with the terror organizations that would really like to tear this country down. Now, if you think that's a worthy cause, if you think America has been too arrogant, if you think America has just been too big, too powerful for too long, well, then you might want to assist them in the inexorable destruction of your own country. But personally, I don't want to do that. I would like to see this country stand and get better. And the way it gets better is by actually being involved in how its day-to-day policies are conducted. That's something that Americans are not good at. This generation is not very good at being involved actually in the day-to-day governing of their own country. What we find a little bit easier to do is to go out on Market Street in San Francisco or Times Square in New York and sort of vent this vague anti-war feeling because things just aren't right somehow and you just don't know what to do about it. I got a great idea. Get up off your dead ass and get involved in how your country runs. Maybe try voting. Go to a PTA meeting. I don't know. Get out of the house. I know you got out of the house to go to Market Street. Go further out of the house. 1-800-449-8686, Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry, 1-800-449-8686. Phil Hendry Show is back. 1-800-449-8686.
Sometimes I say to people, I'm against this American Express world traveler anti-war protester. I've come up with these terms that really anger some of the people that I know, like September 10th anti-war protester. What does it mean, Phil? Well, it means these are people that want to hang on to the past. They don't realize that we've entered a new world, that we have passed through a door that we cannot go back through again. What does it mean, Phil, when you call them sometimes I say the stock portfolio watching anti-war movement? Well, those are the people who, they're kind of the modern day yuppie who keeps an eye on his stock portfolio and his money-making opportunities, but also on the weekend assuages his conscience by going out and protesting the war and talking about the brutal imperialistic policies of America and not really making the connection between America's business imperialism and his own greed at home. And I say all of that to lay this headline on you from today's Daily News in New York. France against war, but not against cashing in on it. Associated Press, Paris, worried it could be shut out of business deals in post-war Iraq. France is drawing up plans to win French companies access to lucrative oil and reconstruction contracts. The government is determined that French companies will be part of rebuilding Iraq, despite President Jacques Chirac's vigorous opposition to the war, a finance ministry official said.
Oh, my God.
Guy Meunier, an executive board member of the French-Iraq Association for Economic Cooperation, said business leaders and government representatives were studying how to gain a foothold in post-war Iraq. Now, you know that Chirac said he did not want any post-war administration of Iraq that was run by the Americans and British because that would legitimize the war. Now, that is a very clear picture of how the headlines play. Now, what's behind the scenes in every war? What's behind the scenes in every war is the legitimizing of those wars through business contact. Jacques Chirac is, quite frankly, a rather notable hypocrite. I mean, I'm surprised that he's so brazen in his obvious hypocrisy. Sometimes these people try to kind of, you know, put a little finesse on it. I mean, they try to get a little camouflage, a little makeup, a little lip gloss. But he's come right out and he said, the war is not legitimate, but we want to get a piece of that post-war pie. Now, that is record-breaking hypocrisy on every level. Every level. Personal, national. And it reflects accurately today's American anti-war movement. The finance ministry official who spoke on condition of anonymity confirmed discussions were underway with business leaders about Iraq. Well, you better start talking to some American business leaders, because talking to some other frog business leaders ain't going to do it. What, are they going to have a round table of French business leaders on what's going to happen? You cats ain't calling any shots. You aren't calling any shots, France. By the way, Germany is boycotting American goods as of today. There are certain shops in Germany that won't sell Marlboro cigarettes, won't sell Budweiser beer, Coca-Cola, and these things, and they won't use American Express. Can you imagine the Krauts trying to get by without a good Marlboro cigarette? Ain't going to happen. We'll see how long that lasts, Krautenheimer. You guys, you know, the number one thing those GIs was dishing out after World War II, those Marlboros. The Budweiser, I'll give you. You got way better beer. But the Marlboros, did I tell you about a friend of mine that was working the Monsters of Rock show in Moscow? He was doing sound. I tell you about this, Craig. He went from the hotel to the stadium every day because he was doing sound with a pack of Marlboros. That's what he gave the cab driver. Cab driver didn't want any money. Just Marlboro cigarettes. And they say smoking's unhealthy? All right, officials in Paris say French firms' experience in working in Iraq would be an advantage. Well, I'll bet you guys have all kinds of experience. French companies, many with ties to Baghdad stretching back decades, have established themselves as the largest suppliers of goods to Iraq since a UN trade embargo was partially lifted in 1996. In 2001, France exported $705 million worth of goods to Iraq within the framework of the United Nations' now frozen oil for food program. Communications equipment made Alcatel clinch a $75 million contract to upgrade Baghdad's phone network. And Renault sold $75 million worth of tractors and farming vehicles to Iraq. French oil giant Total Fina Elf probably has the biggest stake. It spent 6 years in the 90s doing preparatory work on two giant oil fields and has signed two tentative agreements with Saddam to develop them. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Is there anything? Is there anything they could possibly say in defense? And there's my brother-in-law saying, the French are against the war on principle. Come on! Principle and interest. Interest on the principle. Mounier said he believes American companies will have difficulties in Iraq because of widespread anger against the U.S.-led bombing campaign. I don't see how American executives can work when their lives will be at risk, he said. There'll be such hatred toward Americans. You mean we'll hate, they will hate the people that threw Saddam out. They might turn on the French when they finally get an earful of what you guys were doing. They might like, may not like any frogs over there when they finally get an earful of what you guys were pulling for the last 10 years. I wouldn't be talking about how they're going to be angry at Americans when the Iraqi people finally get a noseful of what the frogs were doing over there for the last 12, 15 years. They may get real pissed at the French, not the Americans, and how the French enabled all that torture. Mounier criticized French companies for negotiating with American companies for a piece of their business in Iraq, saying that such collaboration would damage the image of French business among Iraqis. You mean among the Ba'ath Party socialists? That's who you're talking about. Damage the French image among all of Saddam's pals. Yeah, I'm sure all those people we saw talking to the Marines out in South Iraq, they got lots of French friends. Differences over how to run Iraq after the war have put added strain on already tense relations between the United States and several European countries. France opposes any U.S. reconstruction plan that would sideline United Nations development agencies, multilateral organizations, and non-governmental aid groups. Chirac has warned that France would vote against any U.N. Security Council resolution that would give the American and British belligerents the right to administer Iraq. I have seen it all. Well, you know what? They're right. Let the French in. Let them run the show. They know all about it. Why, with any luck, they might be able to get some semblance of another Saddam Hussein back in power. Let them in. Let them do it all. We'll just do the heavy lifting, France. We'll go ahead. We'll get in there. We'll kick all the bad guys out and try to make life livable for these people and, at the same time, protect a little bit of Britain and the United States from the possibility of terror attack because a terror-sponsoring nation has been taken out. But otherwise, you guys go ahead and reap all the benefits. The French really believe that they're so much better than anybody else that they can go around dropping these loads on the street, and we'll actually scoop them up and throw them in a doggy bag. They're like a really well-groomed poodle that craps on the beach, and then they look down and wait for you to slip on the glove and throw it in the trash can. I mean, they're unbelievable. By the way, what was Steve Martin's thing in the Grammys the other night? The gay mafia left a poodle head in his bed? You didn't hear that? Oh, my God. Go ahead, France. Have at it, baby. When the war's over, come on back in. The water's fine. You get in there. You won't mind, however, if we kind of let it slip that you were the guys that were in bed with Saddam. There may be a few people angry at Saddam. And they, when they find out that it was the French that were his very best friends all these years, I wouldn't give you 5 cents for the life of a French businessman in that country. What do you think of that? If we finally let it slip how the French were the ones that enabled Saddam Hussein all of those years and were just cozy with him on every level, well, the Iraqi people get a nose full of that. You may not be very, very popular over there. Right now, we're doing our PR work. We're on the ground blowing up Ba'ath Party guys and whatever the hell Ba'ath Party is. We're blowing up all these Ba'ath Party guys and Republican Guard guys. We're taking out the bad guys. The Iraqi people can see it for themselves. They can see for themselves who's putting their money where their mouth is. Americans not having any credibility or currency in Iraq? Who are you kidding? When this thing's over with, the only guys that ought to be looking over their shoulder and sleeping with one eye open are you frogs. After what you've been pulling. Thank you. That's today's editorial opinion.
I'm Edward Spiel.
You ever hear those general managers that give the editorial? What is up with these guys, you know?
And now, General Manager Bob Stone with today's editorial.
Thank you. The public pool at 4th and Decatur has been pissed in long enough. I can smell it for a block. Our station, WANG, proposes to eliminate
whatever. All right, 1-800-449-8686, 1-800-449-8686, Phil Henry Show.
Phil Henry Show, 1-800-449-8686. 1-800-449-8686. The Phil Hendry Show is back.
By the way, Iran fears it's next. Well, maybe they are. Iran yesterday reached out to India for support amid fears that the country was next on the target list of the United States once it successfully dislodged the Saddam Hussein regime in Iraq. The U.S., whose broader objective in the ongoing war against Iraq is to smash the support bases of the Al-Qaeda terrorist network, has dubbed Iran as part of the axis of evil with the Iraq, Libya, North Korea, and Syria thing. Last week, even as the U.S. prepared for war against Iraq, State Department officials expressed concern over a number of nuclear facilities in Iran. I bet you it's tough to go to sleep at night realizing that suddenly, you know, you've been mentioned in a State Department briefing. Well, I got through today, and by the way, Iran has a couple of factories. While Iran has said the nuclear plants are for producing power to meet its electricity needs, it apprehends that by focusing on the issue, the U.S. is laying the ground for a possible military action against their country. 1-800-449-8686, Phil Hendry Show. This is Marissa. Hello, Marissa.
Hi.
How are you?
First-time caller and first-time listener.
Thank you very much.
And I have to say, I really enjoy the passion that you have for things.
You're very kind.
But the one thing that I just wanted to say was that whether we're Americans or Canadians or French or Germans, these rulers or dictators and prime ministers or whatever they are, don't speak for us people, because the bottom line is that we just want to get along. We want a better world. And yes, you know, some people are ignorant. And to cut each other off and cut each other up is really giving Saddam and all these people power. Because now we're just fighting amongst ourselves, when we would be much more powerful if we just continued and really, you know, continued on, like you said. You know, instead of, if you know, if one person is pro-war and one person is anti, respecting each other's opinions. Like, there's certain things I don't like, I don't agree with, but I listen.
Well, yes, but there's a point where I can't listen to the bullcrap forever, uh-huh. You know, and I have to... But my conscience would not allow me to do any other thing than to argue with these people who are against the war. I can't listen to their stupidity. Now,
yeah.
You're right. I mean, but, you know, frankly, the anti-war movement has dictated the terms of the argument. They have lowered it from an intellectual plane to a street fight. They're the ones that have called names. They're the ones that have trotted out all the old tired baby killer this and imperialistic that. So fine, they want to fight on that level, we'll fight on that level. If they want to get smart, we can be smart, but there's very few of them that are. So I'm not going to allow the President of the United States, who I'm not a Republican, I'm a Democrat, but to call him Hitler... This is as ignorant as it gets.
Yeah, I totally agree. Even, I mean, I remember listening to one show, and one guy started using area codes. Like, in Toronto, we have 416 and 905, and he was separating 416 and 905ers, and I thought, oh, my God, like, when is this going to stop?
No, oh, yeah, we got that in Los Angeles, too. There's the, I don't notice it. Some people think that an area code is cooler than another, but
yeah.
if you're down to arguing about which area code is cooler, they desperately need lives. They desperately need to get out and get some classes in basket weaving. You can swim with the dolphins. There's a lot of things you can do.
When everything was so loving after 9/11, it was like everybody was just so together, and now everybody is so torn apart.
That's because everybody after 9/11,
everyone
after 9/11 thought it was going to be just one big party, and we'll go over and kick ass in the Taliban, and it's just going to be so easy. It'll be just like the Gulf War, and we'll prance back to America and go back to our lives. It's just not the case. I mean, it's done, man. Marissa, thank you for
your
call today from Canada. Okay?
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Maybe. 1-800-449-8686. Yeah, after 9/11, man, we just came galloping back to the States, all, you know, impressed with ourselves. Did another little bombing campaign in Afghanistan, just like we did in Iraq. Dropped a few ground troops. Bombed the hell out of those, what was that, Bora Tora, Tora Booga, Ooga Booga, whatever the hell that thing was. Chased all the ragheads back out into Pakistan. You know, where's Osama? We don't know. What the hell's up with him? Who knows? Trotted on back to the States. Got back into our lives, didn't we? We just went right back into our lives and tried to pretend like none of it ever happened. Tried to pretend like it was all just a bad, bad dream, and that we would wake up and it would be America 1995. Pick a year. What's your favorite year? Some people like 1985, made a lot of money in the stock market in 85. Some people may like 96. That's when we began that big climb from 6,000 points. Who knows? But the, you know, there's no going back. Now, I'm not saying it can't be great. It can't be fantastic. I love living here. I think it's a beautiful day. Life's good. But either we fight them over there or we fight them here. I'd much rather fight them over there. And in the process, we're helping out a nation of people who desperately need the help. And for the French to say the American businessmen better watch their backs because the Iraqis won't have a very kind thought for the guys that were bombing their cities. Boy, is that wishful thinking. Where are you living, man? I think we ought to start a big campaign in France, like we'll drop leaflets that say, not in France, in Iraq, saying, when the French arrive, remember, those are your fine friends that were in bed with Saddam. Those are the guys that were eating all the periwinkles there at 1 o'clock in the afternoon with the pinky finger raised while they were sipping French champagne. Be sure to welcome your fine French business friends. Oh, I couldn't. I'd love to do that. I think I'm going to start getting on the Internet. I'll be contacting my friends in Iraq and just load it up for the French when they get back into town. Hoo-hoo, baby. All right, our number is 1-800-449-8686. We are live here on the Phil Hendry Show. We are doing our Iraq War coverage. Coming up, we are going to be recapping some of the things that have gone on during the day. We'll be right back. 1-800-449-8686.
Phil Hendry, 1-800-449-8686. This is the Phil Hendry Show, 1-800-449-8686.
British Marines, Royal Marines as they're called, were deployed to Iraq's border with Iran yesterday in a move that will unnerve... When I say yesterday, that's today. This is from a London news agency. Were reported to have been deployed to Iraq's border with Iran today in a move that will unnerve Tehran's regime, which fears encirclement by American-led forces in Iraq and Afghanistan. The Ministry of Defense said the Royal Marines were merely securing their area of operations after seizing the Fah Peninsula. But with Iranian troops manning positions on the other side of the Shatt al-Arab waterway, British forces face a highly sensitive task. Tensions were illustrated by a succession of border incidents. A rocket struck an Iranian oil refinery depot in Abadan. That was on Friday, injuring two people, while there were reports on Monday that Iranian forces had fired on British troops on the Fah Peninsula. Iran, part of America's axis of evil, is formally neutral, but fears it could be the next target for attack. America has waged war against two of Iran's most hated foes, the former Taliban regime in Afghanistan and the Baathists in Baghdad. But the great Satan, as America is known, now has forces on two of Iran's borders. We're going to need to get in there, get this job taken care of, and get the hell out. That's what we got to do. Get in, do the job, secure the country, get the hell out of there. We don't need to be part of any administration of Iran. Why don't we let the British do that? I got a better idea. Let the French come in and do it. They're so eager to get back into bed, back into that country, and like vultures, swoop down and start sucking at the drippings from the trough. Just like, you know, I mean, just like carrion. Just like carrion eating vultures. They want to fly right down there, and after all of the fighting is over, start sucking at all the drippings. I mean, that's... So let them. Let them. What is the Baath Party? It's spelled B-A-A-T-H. It runs Iraq. And I told you that it is a very much like the old National Socialists of Germany. It operates on a Führer principle. That is, a single leader. Now, we're really not familiar with that in America. I mean, it's just, huh? I mean, we elect presidents, and we have, here in this country, we vote them in and we vote them out. And we vote them in and we vote them out. And sometimes we keep them in for one, and sometimes we keep them in for two, and sometimes we just kick their ass out. And it just depends on the mood that we're in. Believe it or not, there are still countries on the face of the earth where there is a guy who decides he's going to be the leader, and you don't have anything to say about it. And if you do, well, they'll attach car batteries to your genitals. Kind of rude, isn't it? Excuse me, I was just expressing my opinion. Well, that's too bad. You know, they just go ahead and give you just the nipple clamps. And it's one guy and one guy alone. And you pledge allegiance to that guy, not to any principle. You don't say, I pledge allegiance to the Internationale, or to the Politburo, or to the workers of the world. It's the one guy. It is formerly the Ba'ath Arab Socialist Party, political party and movement influential among Arab communities in the Middle East, especially in Syria and Iraq. The Ba'ath Party was from the beginning a secular Arab nationalist party. Socialism, not Marxism, was quickly adopted as the party's economic dogma. Unity, freedom, and socialism are still the watchwords. From its earliest development, and when they say unity, they mean Arab unity, freedom from colonialism and socialism. These are still the watchwords. From its earliest development, the motivation behind Ba'athist political thought and its leading supporters was the need to produce a means of reasserting the Arab spirit in the face of foreign domination. Moral and cultural deterioration, it was felt, had so weakened the Arabs that Western supremacy spread throughout the Middle East. Arabs needed a regeneration of the common heritage of people in the region to drive off debilitating external influences. Well, what the hell happened? Because that doesn't sound too bad. What happened? Good Lord. In other news, a truck driver from South Fairmont, Cincinnati, I guess, is this what I'm to believe, was arrested Monday after he drove a group of anti-war protesters. He drove right into it with his tractor trailer. In the semi-cab, stopped about 10 feet from the nearest protester, said Larry Shartman, one of the about 40 people who were participating in a Peace in Iraq rally. Police charged James Waters, 49, with aggravated menacing, inducing panic and reckless operation in the incident. It was an anti-war demonstration. We were holding up signs so the people on the interstate could see them, said Mary Ellen Reese, 46, of East Walnut Hills. There were 30 or 40 of us standing here holding our signs, and I turned around, and he was on the sidewalk coming toward us, leaning on his horn. Sounds pretty funny. I turn around, here goes, burr, burr. It's like something right out of the Coyote and Roadrunner. The general prevailing sentiment was that some of us were going to get hit. One person was in a wheelchair, so he really had to scatter. Not that anybody was going to help him. It was frightening. It did stop before he hit anyone. Well, cool. He's just scared some people. What's wrong with that? Guy didn't hit anybody? One of the demonstrators said it was a peaceful event until the truck appeared. I heard the horn blowing. He was up on the sidewalk. It stopped about 10 feet from the nearest protester. It was really peaceful until that moment. And then I looked down, and you got it. I needed a change. Okay. Back at you, brother. The cat didn't do it. He didn't hurt anybody. All he did was scare the crap out of him. Reminds me of those people who used to go around hitting people with cream pies. Those were the days. Remember those days when they would just nail someone with a cream pie? Talk about brilliant. All right, so the war in Iraq continues. The troops are about 90 to 60 miles away from Baghdad. There is really stiff resistance. The Larry Kings of the world and everybody else thinks that this is kind of weird and unusual. And, you know, get King off the air, please, in the name of everything holy. Get him out of there. Get somebody. You want to know why your ratings on CNN are in the toilet? Get someone, anyone in there who's going to get to the point and not hem and haw around about how, man, isn't this taking a little bit longer than the Gulf War? I think that we could be in for a big defeat. Well, the fact of the matter is, yeah, we're meeting stiffer resistance than we thought, and we're going to, you know, adjust for that and continue on. They got tanks, they got guns, they got soldiers, they're going to shoot back. It's called a war. What did you want, Larry? Did you think that there were going to be people out there throwing rose petals in their path? with a big sign that says, welcome to Iraq, come on in, the orange juice is free. Like they got a hospitality suite set up. Some woman in a bed sheet and some guy doing that, and they're giving away free orange juice. They got date shakes. There's a huge battle today south of Najaf. That's about 95 miles south of Baghdad, and they were getting it on fairly intensively there, and my understanding is 150 to 500 Iraqis were killed. Now, understand, I hope we've mended our ways since Vietnam, when they used to inflate the death figures of the enemy soldiers. I'm pretty sure we're not doing that anymore, because there was such a stink about that back then, when they had like a million Vietnamese killed a week. All right, our number, 1-800-449-8686, 1-800-449-8686. It's going to be a tougher war than some people thought. So what? Sometimes you got to adjust your plan a little bit. You mean there's a lot of shooting going on and people are getting killed? You better believe it. One of the things that they may have to adjust is this trying to be as humane as possible thing, because it's just simply, it's not doing us any good. We got Iraqi soldiers dressed in civilian clothing shooting back, shooting at us under the white flag of surrender, hiding in hospitals, hiding in schools. It's not doing us any good. You're going to kill a few Marines before we figure this out. 1-800-449-8686, Phil Henry Show.
Phil Henry, 1-800-449-8686.
Phil Henry Show is back. 1-800-449-8686.
Security Council is responding to Arab and non-aligned nations that have demanded an end to the war in Iraq, and the withdrawal of U.S.-led troops have scheduled an emergency meeting for Wednesday. The meeting will begin Wednesday afternoon, is likely to continue into Thursday, and it will be a meeting that will discuss whether there should be a resolution demanding that U.S. troops withdraw from Iraq. 1-800-449-8686, Phil Henry Show. By the way, did you say you heard Dale die today over on KFI, our flagship station in Los Angeles? Poor Dale. He is getting frustrated. I heard, apparently, well, I don't even want to say, but I think he calls somebody a weenie. All right, or language to that effect. Here is Ken. Ken, you're on the Phil Henry Show. Ken?
Yeah, hello, Phil.
Yes, sir, I'm right here.
Hey, listen, Phil, I was just listening to your comment about the protesters and the truck coming down the sidewalk and blowing his horn and stopping within 10 feet. And
mm-hmm.
You kind of made light of the fact that the guy crapped his pants. Now, let's change perspective on that, Phil, and maybe you were out expressing your opinion on the sidewalk, and I walked up within 10 feet of you with a gun drawn, pointed at your face, and said, ha ha, I'm going to stop right here. I mean, it's a serious thing. And I think
what is a serious thing?
Good.
What's a serious thing?
Going down the sidewalk, jumping on the sidewalk with the truck at people, honking the horn like you're going to run them over. What do you think those people feel like?
I personally don't care.
That's the problem. You don't care.
No, I don't. Those people, those anti-war protesters, no, I don't care what they think.
But they're not human beings then?
No, I didn't say that.
Well, then why are you making light of the whole deal?
Because it sounded funny to me.
It's funny that some guy crapped his pants because he was so frightened. But somebody's going to possibly run him over and all the people with him?
The way you just described it there, yes.
Well, that's what I'm saying, Phil. You know, I don't think making light of it is a good thing. That's all.
Well, I can't help it. It sounded funny to me.
Well, it doesn't sound funny to me, and I think if you ask your radio audience, they might give you the same opinion, but maybe you want to throw it out there and ask a few other people.
Well, I'm going to tell you this, Ken. If you want me to do what you just asked me to do, I'm going to get a lot of people who are going to agree with me, because basically my fans will start pouring in on the phone lines.
Yeah, well, you got a point there, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, that's...
I just wanted to call you and make a point. That's all.
That's fine. I respect your opinion.
Okay,
thank
good.
You for calling.
All right, thank
Bye.
You.
There, was that nice enough, Janice? 1-800-449-8686. Nah, you know, you're right. It's not cool. The guy crapped his pants or whatever. He didn't really. I added that as an editorial comment. You're right. It's a wrong thing to do. It just sometimes things are described to me and they sound amusing. Here is Jake. Hello, Jake. You're on the Phil Hendry Show.
Yeah, I thought Michael Moore was shortened than his time on TV last night or the other night, because as soon as his time was up, they ended up cutting him off completely, where other people who were receiving awards got to talk beyond and beyond that. And I thought that was totally unfair for Michael Moore.
Uh-huh.
Thank you very much.
Nice screen job there, Chris. Here is Mark on the Phil Hendry Show. Hello. Hey, Mark.
Hey there.
Yes, sir.
Several weeks ago, they tested the Moab bomb in Pensacola, and I don't think they've used it yet. You got any insight or heard
anything
about it?
No, I don't, sir. 1-800-449-8686. Well, we've reached that point in the, this is a lot shorter than the Gulf War. It's about 4 days, and people got nothing to say. 4 days, and the Gulf War, it lasted about a month, about 30 days. 4 days on this one, and that's it. Nobody's got a thought. They haven't got a clue out there. Their country's at war. We've got the possibility of people dying, and everybody's sitting out there with their thumb up their ass making dinner. I guess that's what's going on. Fine. Jesus. Weak-ass phone calls. Unbelievable. I even got on the people up in Oregon about that flag thing. They don't care. They don't want to fly the flag up in Oregon because it may upset some anti-war demonstrators. You know, it's like, you're right. It would upset them. I don't want to make them cry. And the first thing you're going to do to make an anti-war demonstrator cry is by showing them the American flag. They're just going to go, ooh. And we don't want that to happen, do we? You know, you guys in Oregon got it so much all over the rest of us. You got it all figured out how to live. You got it all figured out how to dress. You live in the nicest place. Every time the people from California go up there, you, scratch their paint, or you let the air out of the tires on their cars. You just got it all under control. And your anti-war protesters, man, they don't take any crap from anybody. They'll go out and kick ass, even on a fireman who's flying a flag. I'll tell you, that's some kind of... where the men are men and the women are men, Oregon. Some kind of people. But we're in day 5 of this conflict, and there is nothing that anybody's got to say anymore. There's nothing that anybody's got to say. There's no opinion that anybody's got. And, that's probably something I should have expected, because you have to really keep educated to have a sustained opinion about this. You'll notice the anti-war protests, they've all dwindled down to a dry fart. And now we're just sitting and waiting, not really knowing what's going to happen, all nervous that we're going to piss off the Arabs, all worried that we're making the international community angry, all upset that we're not going along with the program, and what if we're meeting stiff resistance? Oh my God, what does that mean? Why, we should have had this wrapped up by Sunday. And, the media is, of course, is doing its very, very best to utterly and completely run around with their heads cut off like Chicken Freaking Little. Oh, my God, there's the troops have met stiff resistance. Yeah? Haven't you met stiff resistance before? Or maybe you haven't seen anything that's stiff lately. I'm talking to you, Larry. By the way, Abu Dhabi TV, whatever the hell that is, says that the Iraqi TV's been blown off the air. Good riddance. All those patriotic songs give me a freaking headache. Here's Nancy. Hi, Nancy.
Hi.
How are you, ma'am?
I'm great. Hey, I was wondering if you might want to get some sort of dialogue going, either your opinions
anything,
or maybe...
Anything. What do you got? Give me an idea.
Maybe some of our soldiers out there who, aren't over in Kuwait or Iraq right now.
Yeah.
About how they feel about sort of our way of playing, playing really fair and looking out for the best interests of everybody when they're just playing completely dirty pool.
That's a good point.
Are we going to change our tactics a little bit, or are we going to, how many of our servicemen are going to die trying to protect their pretend civilians, et cetera?
They interviewed some Marines over there after these incidents occurred, and they said, okay, that's it. Gloves are coming off. The next time I see some guy with a white flag, man, I'm going to take another look at the guy. They were pissed. And so I don't think there needs to be anything said. Frankly, I think those guys are already well on their way to the state of real pissed off. And they have said they're going to definitely be a little bit harder on some of these so-called surrendering Iraqis. The tougher issue, though, is what the British are facing right now in Basra. They're fighting a militia. They're fighting a Saddam Fedayeen who are not uniformed. They're dressed in civilian clothes. They've essentially made themselves into a guerrilla band. So they don't know who's got a gun, et cetera. And this is nasty. This is nasty stuff. And
Well, I'm glad, I haven't been able to watch the news 24/7 because I do work, but
right.
I'm glad to hear that they're going to change that a bit because that was starting to bug me a little, got to admit.
Okay, ma'am. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye. The U.S. Air Force blasted Iraqi TV with an experimental electromagnetic pulse device called the E-bomb in an attempt to knock it off the air and shut down Saddam Hussein's propaganda machine. The highly classified bomb creates a brief pulse of microwave power enough to fry computers, blind radar, silence radios, trigger crippling power outages, and disable the electronic ignitions in vehicles and aircraft. Iraqi TV did go off the air for several hours. It returned to broadcasting later with a weaker signal. So what is Larry King talking about? Once again, Larry's misinforming me. Once again, I flip it on to that hunchback, and what do I get? Nothing but lies. Sheer lies. Larry, you liar. All right. Just kidding around, Larry. 1-800-449-8686. This is the Phil Hendry Show, talking about the war in Iraq. We'll be right back.
Phil Hendry, 1-800-449-8686. The Phil Hendry Show is back.
All right. Got some news here for you. Well, I did have some news here. Yeah, I got the news for you that the Navy, coalition naval forces were on high alert against suicide attacks after Iranian gunboats intercepted an Iraqi speedboat packed with half a ton of high explosives. Three other Iraqi speedboats, which it is feared may contain similar amounts of explosives, got away when Iranian forces engaged Iraqis at the mouth of the Shat al-Arab River, the waterway that marks the border between the two countries. The explosives were discovered after one of the Iraqi boats was run aground during the confrontation. British, American, and Australian warships in the region have been on high alert for the risk of an al-Qaeda strike since the suicide attacks against the coal in October of 2000. We're going to be giving a synopsis of what happened today in about a half an hour. We're going to be talking about all of the major military battles. And we got a couple of scoops in there for you, too. So in 30 minutes, I would be listening if I were you. This isn't going to be a standard run-of-the-mill recap of the day's activities that you get anywhere. Because we got a couple of things that we know that nobody else knows. All right, here is Terry. Hello, Terry, on the Phil Hendry Show.
Hi, Phil.
Hi.
I was just calling in to say that there are some of us out here that are against the war, but we support the troops. Now, I'm a previous Gulf War veteran, and when I say I support the troops all the way, no one should ever say anything bad about them. They're doing their job, and they're doing a great job. But I think we're going to lose a lot of money, a lot of assets, and I don't think we're going to accomplish the end result, I think, is not going to be what we want. I think any government that we establish in Iraq is not going to hold up because it's a Muslim society, and they don't live under democratic governments very well.
Well, excuse me, I'm having a little bit of dinner, Terry.
Enjoy.
But I heard everything that you said.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that anybody is proposing a Western-style democracy per se. And I don't know that anybody is proposing a non-Muslim or secular government. It's quite obvious that country is ruled, for better or for worse, by certain religious interests. the Shiite Muslims were just talking about being one of them.
I didn't think the United States could establish any other type of government, you know, legally, totalitarian type government which they live under.
Legally? What do you mean legally?
Well,
we're going to do
morally.
We may not even be morally. Look, here's the reason for this war is to take out a terror sponsoring nation that has been hell-bent on developing weapons of mass destruction that would have included nuclear weapons as well as radiological, biological, chemical weapons. It was a country that for 12, 13, 14 years was in violation of UN sanctions after it was defeated in a war that was sanctioned by the United Nations, and the UN shockingly decided that it would simply not enforce its own resolutions. So the United States, because we've been attacked on September the 11th, had 3,000 Americans murdered, entered into a new era of us being the target of terror attacks, decided to be proactive, and we have taken the war to the Iraqi regime. Is it a tough war? I have no doubt. You say we're going to lose a lot of assets? I guess in some wars that happens. Will we lose it?
No.
I don't think it's possible, but I suppose that it is. I don't think it's probable, I should say, but I suppose that it is. I'm not exactly sure when people say to me, I'm against the war, but I support the troops. I don't know what they're talking about.
Well,
now, I don't even know what you think about this war.
I just think it's going to cost us more than we are going to get out of it, more than we're going to receive. Even, like I say, if we go in and do... get rid of Saddam Hussein and his government, what is it going to accomplish? Another regime is going to move in and establish the same type of government, the same type of...
Well, maybe we can exert this much influence that we can be assured of the fact that whatever regime is in there is a friendly regime to the United States and will not tolerate terrorists training in their country, will not fund those terrorists, and won't encourage terrorism. We're trying to get rid of terrorism. We're trying to get rid of the willy-nilly attack on civilians by ununiformed combatants whose sole purpose is to strike terror and to demoralize a civilian populace. If you want to fight a war, supposedly you're supposed to fight it between uniformed participants, not go after children in a daycare center or machine gun people in an airport.
True.
So what we're trying to do is get a handle on this thing called terrorism. And if we can at least get a friendly regime in Iraq, that says a lot.
We had one in Saudi Arabia, and it turns out that they were supporting the terrorists equally as well.
I don't know how friendly they were. I never bought that. You know.
Kuwait, I think, is the only friend that we really have over there, and I'm not real sure about them.
All right, man. I appreciate your call very much, Terry.
Thanks.
Bye-bye. 1-800-449-8686. That's it in a nutshell, man. We ain't trying to do anything other than that. This is a bold, bold step. And every bold step in the history of the world has had everybody standing on the sidelines, castigating it and making fun of it and saying it'll never work. Every bold move by any man or woman since the beginning of time has had everybody lined up on the sidewalks saying, don't do it, man. It won't work, man. It's a bad idea, man. This is a bold step, and it's never been done before. Never been done before in the history of the last century or the paltry little smidgen of this century. And that is a nation. Excuse me, can we not be on the phone while I'm talking? Can we just hang up on those people, please? Thank you. Who are those guys calling? NBC? Hey, NBC, don't ever call this studio again while I'm on the air. I'm talking about a war with Iraq and I got NBC calling? What do they want? They want to bring pictures by. If you guys ever call this studio again, I wouldn't do a pilot with you if you were the last freaking network on television. And that is a promise. Don't ever call this studio while I'm working again. There, I bet you that told him. This is a bold move. In the first time in the history of a civilized nation, we are taking the fight, since Thomas Jefferson took the fight to the Barbary Pirates at the turn of the 19th century. I know you all know what I'm talking about, don't you? Jesus. It's just like us little amateur historians to say, well, I was just talking about Trafalgar Square the other day when... But Jefferson did. He went to the Mediterranean and took on the Barbary Pirates who were harassing our ships. We have taken on a terror-sponsoring regime. Boldly, beyond our borders, striking at the very nest of a regime that without question, without any argument whatsoever, has sponsored, funded, and enabled terrorists for decades. Additionally, if that's not enough, I guess people need more. Well, we can give you more. That probably isn't enough for most people, is it? All right. They've had a nuclear program, a biological weapons program, a botanical weapons program, a Game Boy program. They got it all. And they've been doing it in the face of the international communities demanding that they stop for years. The United Nations is a country, is a union of countries that is obviously not all that serious about enforcing its resolutions when the primary members of its Security Council have other fish to fry, like the French and their economic interest in Iraq. $1 million contracts for rebuilding telephones. $1 million contracts for developing nuclear power. $1 million contracts for this and $1 million contracts for that. And when I bring these things up to my friends in the September 10th anti-war movement, they say, well, they don't believe it. They think all of that stuff only Americans do. Only the Americans get involved with regimes that are decrepit and degraded and degenerate and murderous. They think only Americans cut $1 million deals with those regimes. And they're shocked to find out that their very good friends, the Germans and the Russians and the French, do the exact same thing. When they cast a veto in the Security Council, it isn't because they have any great love for the Iraqi people. Probably isn't because they have any great love for Saddam Hussein. They're trying to save all that juice, honey. That's what I can't stand. Everybody pointing the colonialist finger at America when everybody else has got their finger in the pie. What's the matter, man? We taken out one of your best customers? Too bad. 1-800-449-8686. Carl, hello, you're on the Phil Henry Show.
Yeah, hi, good evening.
Yes, sir.
I've been actually listening to you, and I tried to talk to you yesterday, but I couldn't.
Did you call in, sir? Did you get on the air?
No, I didn't, actually.
All right.
But I am on now, I hope.
Uh-huh.
Basically, what I'm calling you about this war, I think this war is really does not help the interest of the United States in the long run. And the only reason I'm saying that, and please, okay, I understand you're trying to be compassionate and patriot, which is very good of you, but you can't really try to alienate everybody just because you think so. The thing is that you need to know is that...
You can't alienate everybody to what?
Well, you can't alienate everybody and think that nobody has the right just because, you know, we are at war, and that means, since you're supporting, that means, you know, everybody's wrong and we are right. But what I'm trying to talk to you here about is the Middle East itself. What you're doing right now is, and I agree with you, Saddam Hussein is a bad regime and it's a bad man and we should get rid of him, but not this way. That's all I'm saying is that we went in there and I think in a cowboy style and intimidated everybody in the world. And what is going to happen now is people like Osama bin Laden, which is outrageously a bad person too. These are the people, we are giving them every reason to say, look, see, we told you. Look what happened to the people. And they're going to point to these things and use it.
Tell me, what's happening to the Iraqi people, just so I can get updated on this? What's happening to them that's so horrible?
Well, I mean, you know, no, I mean, well...
No, honestly, honestly, please tell me. What are we doing to the Iraqi people right now that's so horrible?
But come on, don't sound like you'd... We're not doing anything on purpose. Per se. I know we're trying to fight
the
regime.
What are we
doing? But there are civilians that are getting killed. There are people that are getting killed. And you know what? Can I ask you a question?
Really? How many? Wait a minute. Hold on.
Okay.
Civilians are getting killed.
Yeah.
You know that for a fact, huh?
Well, you know that for a fact.
No, I don't know anything for a fact. I know a lot of Iraqi soldiers are getting killed. And I know
now
Marines.
You're
going to
tell me that all
and I know, excuse
are...
me, hold on. I know Marines are getting killed. Don't tell me about pictures, sir. There's no pictures of dead Iraqi civilians.
Well,
right?
I mean, okay, fine.
All
you
right.
know
let's,
what?
Let's stick with the facts. Let's
your
stick
leaders,
with the facts.
Your leaders, your army leaders are admitting so. So, I mean, why are you sitting and saying no?
What are they admitting?
That there are civilians get casualties.
Casualties, sir, are not the same thing necessarily as deaths. Casualty can be an injury or casualty
no,
can
no,
be
no.
a death.
I mean, okay, you know, we just heard about a bus that got bombed over a bridge.
Well, can I tell you about that one? Can I tell you about that? Because I was going to save the scoop for after 7 o'clock. That was a busload of Palestinian fighters on their way in to join the Iraqi army. And it was blown off that bridge on purpose.
You know, I am very surprised that you, all of a sudden you know they're your
I happen to have some sources, and that was blown off that bridge.
It
was blown right off of that bridge.
Then.
Excuse me, Jesus.
But again, please,
what is it with you, man?
Can
I finish a sentence? It was blown off that bridge on purpose.
Well, anyway, I mean, again, you know, you don't want to listen to the truth, please. I mean, as much as you want to reach your point and convince everybody that you're right, please listen to us, too, because
I've been listening for days, sir. I've been listening for days.
Well, no, but you're obviously, my point, again, I don't want to sit and say you're wrong or right. It's not about that. It's about the fact that we intimidated the whole world. I was afraid of one Al-Qaeda. Now we're going to have a bunch of them. Okay, because they are going to use every excuse, just like you are sitting here saying that, given every right to do so with Iraqi regime.
All right.
Okay, which, but
okay, I got
just
a break,
the way
sir.
We went
all
about
right.
it.
That's
we
great.
Went about it 1991.
I heard you, and I got a break, all right? Thank you. We'll hide behind our metal detectors. Thank you. 1-800-449-8686, The Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry, 1-800-449-8686. The Phil Hendry Show is back.
All right, we're going to give you our Phil Hendry news update now. This is from sources exclusive to us. The U.S. War Command has radically reversed the order of its Iraq campaign. Instead of going hell-bent for leather for Baghdad without subduing the rest of the country, General Tommy Franks and his staff have decided that control of Iraq's Iraq's second biggest city, the largely Shiite Basra in the south, could provide a handle to expedite the Baghdad campaign. It must therefore come first. Now, hear what I'm saying, that we are going to subdue Basra first before we go to Baghdad. Now, this is very typical of tactics that change in the midst of an attack, in the midst of a battle plan, extremely typical. However, there will be the geniuses who will say, aha, America is seeing reversals in the field. This must bode badly for their military might. The Iraqis have prevailed. Yeah, okay. Our exclusive military sources tell us Tuesday night, March 25th, at the end of day 6 of the Iraq War, the Allied War Command is counting on the fight for Basra, led by British forces, being resolved tomorrow at the latest. If not, reinforcements will be brought in. So listen to what I'm saying. If Basra is not subdued by tomorrow, there ain't going to be no Baghdad campaign Saturday. They're going to bring reinforcements in. The circumstances leading up to this reversal are as follows. Now listen to this. However much this may be denied, American ground forces have fallen behind their operational timeline, in particular the 1st and 2nd Marine Divisions under the command of General David Conway, which did bypass Basra and headed north. Instead of racing forward, however, these divisions negotiated the Tigris River crossing with utmost caution in case the Iraqi Special Republican Guard troops they encountered unleashed chemical weapons. Then, too, the delayed deployment of the 4th Infantry Division, thanks to the breakdown of a U.S.-Turkish understanding 2 days into the war, leaves a very large gap in the strength consigned to the Baghdad front. The division was to have been, was to have transited Turkey with its tank force, crossing over to the northern Iraq oil town of Mosul and heading south to Tikrit in time to take part of the fight, take part in the fight, I should say, for Baghdad. At the last minute, however, the 4th Division had to be diverted to the Suez Canal for shipment to Kuwait. In another change of plan, the division's troops have been put ashore at the Saudi Red Sea port of Yanbu to be lifted by helicopter and truck to western Jordan and Iraq. So, a lot of time that they didn't think they'd have to take is being taken. And on top of all of that, we are finding out tonight that the U.S. command wants Basra before they go after Baghdad. 1-800-449-8686. Phil Henry Show.
Phil Henry Show. 1-800-449-8686.